reading of the Business Record, Central Iowa's Business Weekly. This is the April 12th edition of the Business Record. I'm Pat Steele. All material heard on IRIS is intended for the use of listeners with print disabilities. Now here's our first story. Waukee breaks ground on its new public safety building. This is an article written by a combination of Business Record staff. The city of Waukee held a groundbreaking ceremony last week for its new public safety building, positioned on the current western edge of Waukee at Northwest 20th Street and T Avenue and Douglas Parkway. The new 90,000 square foot facility will include room to house the additional firefighters, paramedics, EMTs, and police officers the city will hire in the years to come to keep pace with the growing population and expanding commercial landscape. OPN Architects, Sidekick Development, and Ryan Companies U.S. Inc. work closely with the City of Waukee leaders to create the building. The new public safety building is a significant investment that represents Waukee's continued commitment to well-being of our residents and public safety teams. And that's a quote from Mayor Courtney Clark of Waukee. She adds, "This exceptional new facility will provide our first responders with the resources that they need to keep the community safe." And to learn more about the building, you can contact or connect on the Waukee City website. Light Edge to acquire Connectria, including six new data centers. Light Edge, a Des Moines-based cloud service provider, has announced that it will acquire St. Louis-based Connectria, a provider of multi-state infrastructure and managed hosting services. Connectria adds six data center locations to Light Edge's existing footprint of 12 facilities across the country. The acquisition is Light Edge's fourth since GI Partners' investment in 2021 and extends Light Edge's co-location and private cloud offerings into a public cloud services. With this acquisition, Light Edge becomes one of the only secure and compliant infrastructure providers in the country offering both hybrid, co-location, and tailored multi-cloud solutions. And that's according to Light Edge CEO Jim Masterson. The acquisition, according to Masterson, extends Light Edge's co-location and private cloud offering into public cloud services while bringing together two incredibly talented and diverse teams and two highly complementary product suites, geographics, and customer bases. The Tyson closure reflects the tight labor market. This is a story written by Kathy Bolton of the Business Record. In spring 2018, Tyson Fresh Meats Incorporated requested the state of Iowa's help with financing a $43.7 million project to modernize the company's decades-old processing plant in Perry. The approved request was expected to provide Tyson with over $670,000 in tax credits. Over the next 5 years, Tyson made improvements to the Perry plant, but it ended up declining the state incentives because it couldn't meet the hiring requirements. A Tyson official wrote in a letter to the Iowa Economic Development Authority Board in mid-2021, there have been struggles to get enough applicants to fill all the positions. In March, the Arkansas-based meat producer announced the Perry plant will permanently close on June 28th, a move that will leave nearly 1,300 people jobless. Tyson is Perry's largest employer and operates a plant that has been in the community for over 60 years. Tyson officials are mum about what prompted the decision to close the plant and did not respond to interview requests. Observers have speculated that the pork industry's financial struggles in the past year, rising processing costs that have outpaced prices paid to hog producers, played a part in Tyson's decision to close the plant. Others have wondered whether the presence of a union at the Tyson plant played a role in the decision to close the facility. But there are also questions about whether the ability to attract and keep workers contributed to the move to shutter the plant. Industry watchers have said Tyson wanted to start a second shift at the Perry plant, but could not find enough workers. Sven Peterson, Perry's city administrator, said, I think it may have come down to where they were going to put the resources in a tight labor market. Officials with the state of Iowa and in Perry are hopeful history will repeat itself and the community will be able to find a different company to occupy the Perry plant. In 1988, after Oscar Mayer Corporation, which occupied the Perry facility for over 20 years, announced it was shuttering the plant, Iowa Beef Processors stepped forward and bought the facility. Questions exist, though, whether Iowa's tight labor market will hinder a new buyer to the plant. Ben Ayers, a senior economist with Nationwide, said, "In Iowa, it's a very tight labor market, and there's just not enough workers for the number of jobs that there are. It's hard to make a hire if you can't fire a worker." Attracting and retaining workers is not just a new issue in Perry, Peterson said. Over a year ago, the city of Perry held a roundtable discussion with employers about the issues they faced. He said, being able to attract a workforce was the top concern. The need was not industry specific, nor is it unique to Perry, he said. It's a statewide issue that everyone is facing. The inadequate supply of hourly workers was cited by Iowa manufacturing companies as the top inhibitor to growth in the 2023-24 biennial assessment of manufacturers by Iowa State University's Center for Industrial Research and Service, and the acronym for that is CIRIS. It was the first time the lack of workforce was listed as a manufacturer's top issue, said Mike O'Donnell, the director of CIRIS. O'Donnell said, in recent follow-up conversations with leaders of manufacturing companies, the ability to find workers has improved slightly, but not much. In reality, O'Donnell said, we don't see it getting any better for a pretty long time. In February, Iowa had 1,700,900 people in its labor force, and that's 26,000 fewer than in February 2020. Iowa workforce development data shows that Iowa, with an unemployment rate of 2.9%, has nearly 61,000 job openings posted on the agency's website. An aging population is among the reasons for the decline in Iowa's workforce, Ayers said, and there are not enough young people either moving into Iowa or staying in the state after graduating from high school or college to replace those who are retiring. Companies in Iowa, unable to find workers, will either opt to not move forward with expansions or relocate to areas of the country where workers are plentiful, Ayers said. He added, companies looking to open new facilities may bypass Iowa altogether. It's not surprising that a lot of companies, especially tech companies, are rushing to Arizona, a place where they can find workers and where universities are pumping out graduates. Touting the benefits of living in Iowa, including its low cost of living and housing affordability, is one way the state can attract and retain workers, Ayers said. Highlighting those benefits that are innate to the area can draw in workers, especially if they understand that they can have good lives and good careers in Iowa. Lack of an adequate supply of housing is also an issue facing Iowa, which is projected to need nearly 25,000 new residences by 2030. Owner-occupied homes account for 70% of the new housing needed in Iowa's rural, suburban, and urban areas, according to a recent state report. Perry officials understand the connection between supplying businesses with their workforce and the need for an adequate supply of housing, Peterson said. Between 2010 and 2016, no new homes were built in Perry, prompting the city to adopt a tax abatement program, he said. Since 2016, 60 new homes and 60 apartment units have been built in the community of over 8,000 people. Peterson said, we've made some decent strides in that arena, but still, when you're talking about hundreds of employees and you only get a handful of new units a year, it will take a while to catch up. The struggle to provide housing for workers is not unique to Perry. In Osceola, where Osceola Food is located, workers frequently cite housing as a factor in deciding whether to work at the plant. That's according to Miguel Aparicio, human resources manager at the facility. Currently, he wrote, some families are staying in extended stay motels until permanent housing becomes available. For those who cannot find suitable housing locally, commuting from nearby areas is often the alternative. Some companies are helping pay for new housing in the communities in which they are located. In 2022, JBS Food Group, which operates three pork processing plants in Iowa, provided $1.2 million toward the development of a three-building apartment project in Ottumwa. The development included 108 apartment units, 85% of which included two bedrooms. The remainder were three-bedroom units. A similar investment was made in 2023 in Marshalltown, where a 103-unit complex was built. Nearly all the units in both complexes are occupied by GBS workers. Matthew Connolly, a spokesperson for Colorado-based GBS, wrote in an email, "We are working to make the local Iowa communities we call home thrive." JBS and Osceola Food also provide tuition assistance programs to employees and their children. Companies that understand what their employees' biggest issues and challenges are, and then do things that make the employment lives better, are the ones that will attract and keep workers and at the same time grow the business. And that's according to Cirrus O'Donnell. Iowa meat processing plants by the numbers. Nearly 25,000 people work in 28 meat processing plants located in Iowa, and they range from Redwood Farms, Upper Iowa Beef, AgriStar, Progressive Processing, West Liberty Foods, Tyson Foods, Sigma, JBS, Iowa Premium, Burke Corporation, Tyson Foods, Prestige Foods, Seaboard Triumph Foods, Monogram, OSI Group, Smithfield Foods, and previously mentioned Osceola Food. Here's a timeline of history of meatpacking in Perry. The city of Perry's ties to the meat processing industry date back to the mid-1800s when the community had several small butcher shops that served surrounding hog farms. After Gustavus Swift, founder of Swift & Company, invented the refrigerated rail car around 1877, the meatpacking industry quickly grew. Instead of putting live livestock on rail cars, animals were butchered and meat transported in refrigerated rail cars. The regional rail lines that served Perry provided a way for butchers to transport meats to larger communities in Iowa and surrounding states. The following is a history of meatpacking in Perry, compiled from information submitted to the National Register of Historic Places and Capstone Report for the Iowa Certified Public Manager Program in the Perry News. So in 1919, Charles Hosserman, who operated a meat market in Perry, starts a packing plant that was operated by June 20, and it employed 34 people. In 1926, Hosserman Packing Company closed in the mid-1920s because of issues related to an improperly built cold storage area. The plant reopened in 1926 as Perry Packing Company. In 1936, Perry Packing Company was sold to Swift & Company, which is headquartered in Fort Worth, Texas. In 1956, the Perry plant closes because of issues related to water and sewer. In 1960, Perry Industries began construction on a new meatpacking facility just west of the community. The new plant opened in 1962 under the name Iowa Pork Producers. 1963, Iowa Pork merged with Iowa Beef Processors, which continued to operate the plant. An Oscar Mayer Corporation bought the plant in 1965 and started production with 350 full-time workers. By 1975, the plant had 750 employees, almost all of them who were white. In the 1980s, the meatpacking industry, plagued by falling demand for meat and other economic woes, began renegotiating union contracts, closing plants, and reopening them as non-union workplaces and permanently shuttering plants. In 1983, the average base hourly wage of workers at meatpacking plants was cut from $10.69 an hour to $8.19 per hour. In 1988, Oscar Mayer announced Perry plant would close in 1989 and affected about 800 people, or 20% of Perry's workforce. In December of that year, 1988, Iowa Beef Process announced that it will buy the plant and remodel it as a kill and boning facility. Production was slated to start in the summer of 1989. Iowa beef processors did not recognize the union. Starting wages were $5.80 an hour. Few people who had worked for Oscar Mayer remained at the plant. Some former workers transferred Oscar Mayer plants in other parts of the U.S. Others received tuition assistance to go to college, learn a new trade or skill, or found jobs in other communities or companies. Also in 1989, IBP recruits people from Texas, California, Mexico, and Central America to work at the Perry plant. By 1992, about 40% of IBP's workforce was Latino. In 2001, Tyson Fresh Meats acquired the plant after buying IBP, and in March 2024, Tyson announced that the plant will close in a couple months. Osceola Foods faced challenges in attracting and keeping workers as well. The Business Record recently reached out to Osceola Food about the meat processing company's ability to attract and retain employees. Hormel Foods, which operates Osceola Food, opened the plant in 1996. The company's Iowa subsidiary employs 680 people. In late March, it listed more than two dozen job openings with pay that ranged from $19 an hour to $81,000 per year. The company responded to questions from the Business Record, and they did so via email. The answers have been edited for brevity and clarity. First question they asked was, how long does it take to fill open positions at Osceola Food? Miguel Aparicio, manager in human resources, said, for production food worker positions, the average time to fill vacancies typically ranges from a couple of weeks to a month. However, this can vary based on factors such as the volume of applicants, the urgency to fill a position, and any specific skill requirements. He was then asked, are certain jobs easier to fill than others? Aparicio said, yes, certain jobs tend to be easier to fill than others due to factors such as the shift, department, required qualifications, and skills. Entry-level positions like production line workers or general laborers may be easier to fill compared to specializing roles requiring specific skills or experience such as smokehouse techs, maintenance mechanics, or quality control auditors. How does worker turnover at Osceola Food compare with turnover at other Hormel plants? Aparicio said, we found that our worker turnover rates are similar to those at other Hormel plants. However, there's a unique aspect to consider, and that's our location. We are about 45 miles away from a major metro area. We face some challenges in attracting and retaining talent compared to plants located closer to urban places. This geographical factor plays a significant role in our turnover rates as it affects the size and diversity of our candidates pool. From where does Osceola Food typically draw its employees? Aparicio said, while a portion of our workforce comes from Osceola itself, we also draw employees from surrounding areas and communities within Iowa. Additionally, we attract talent from the Des Moines area and other nearby regions. We are the largest employer in Osceola. How does the ability to find workers fill jobs in Iowa compared to other areas where Hormel has facilities? Aparicio said that generally Iowa offers a diverse workforce with individuals possessing a range of skills and experiences. Like many rural areas, attracting and retaining workers in smaller communities can present challenges compared to larger metropolitan areas where there may be a larger pool of candidates. What incentive does Osceola Food offer to attract and retain workers? Some job listings note college tuition for a two-year degree offered as an incentive. Amy Sheehan, the Director of Talent Acquisition and Human Resources at Hormel Food, said, the Hormel Inspired Pathways program was created to help make the dream of a college education a reality for the children of Hormel Food's team members. The program provides a full range of educational services, including tuition for two-year community college degrees, individual college advising, support navigating the financial aid system, assistance with transforming to or planning for a four-year college degree. Hormel Foods has spent nearly $1 million to send over 450 children of Hormel Foods employees to 76 unique community colleges. 40 of the students that have or are participating in the program are from Osceola. And then the final question, has Osceola Food reached out to Tyson workers who will be displaced by the plant closings in Perry? Aparicio said that representatives of Osceola Food have been in Perry to spread the word that we are hiring at Osceola Food. We believe in supporting the local community and providing opportunities for those affected by the plant closure. And again, that was an article written by Kathy Bolton, a staff writer with the Business Record. And we now go to the weekly column of the Business Record about real estate comings and goings in Polk and Dallas counties. This is an article or a column written by Kathy Bolton. And the headline of it is, Two Entities Acquire Apartment Complex on Des Moines' North Side. Limited liability companies based in Creston, Iowa, and St. Paul, Minnesota, have acquired an apartment complex at 3800 Martin Luther King Jr. Parkway in Des Moines. They acquired the property from Cornerstone Apartments, paying the limited liability company $2.5 million. The three-story C-shaped building was constructed in 1971. It includes 45 units. The property is valued at $2.1 million, and that transaction was recorded on April 2nd. Another transaction, Revez Farms, located in Des Moines, paid the Donna Spree's Trust $1.99 million for nearly 90 acres of farmland in northeast Polk County. The land is about 1/2 mile north of Northeast 94th Avenue and east of Northeast 80th Street. KBSB Properties, located in Grimes, paid Birchwood Crossing Park, or Business Park, $8.6 million for property at 7901 Birchwood Court in Johnston. The 7.6-acre parcel includes a 71,984-square-foot warehouse that was built in 2019, and that property is valued at $6.7 million. 1313 21st Street, LLC, located in Ankeny, paid JME $950,000 for property on 21st Street in Des Moines. The property includes a three-story, 18-unit apartment building that was built in 1970. Property is valued at $418,000. Calvin Park, located in Des Moines, paid Calvin Community $8.9 million for property at 44th Street and Hickman Road in Des Moines. The property includes the Calvin Park mixed-use condominiums and adjacent parking. The development, which includes 36 living units, was built in 2018, and that property is valued at $7.1 million. Iowa FLC, located in Clive, paid Homestead Farms $2.3 million for farmland in Polk County. One of the parcels, 39 acres in total, is located north of Northeast 102nd Avenue. That's about 1/4 of a mile east of Northeast 64th Street. The second parcel, located near the first, includes over 80 acres. Infinite Hotels, located in Waukee, paid Hart Family Hotel Ankeny $4.15 million for property at 2406 Southeast Tones Drive in Ankeny. The property includes a three-story, 67-unit hotel built in 2017. A sleep-in has been located in that building, and it's valued at the property itself is valued at $3.4 million. Quick Trip Incorporated, located in La Crosse, Wisconsin, paid GLC DCI Land $3 million for undeveloped property at 808 Street Northwest in Mitchellville. The site includes nearly 10 acres. Thomas Owen, Tara Owen, Matthew Owen, and Shanda Owen paid the Richard Miller Estate $1 million for 70 acres of farmland in northern Polk County. The land is located west of Northeast 64th Street, and that's about 1/4 of a mile north of Northeast 130th Avenue. NH1 Properties, based in Miami, Florida, paid JPJ Investments $1.89 million for property at 6316 Urbandale Avenue. The property includes a three-story apartment building with 30 units, and that building was constructed in 1973, and the property is valued at $1.97 million. Now, a couple items in Dallas County, Roscoe Jones Jr. and Serena Holth paid Paramount Destination Homes just over $1 million for property on Thorne Drive in West Des Moines. The property includes a recently completed 2,000-square-foot ranch house. And finally, from Real Estate News, Chad Pennington paid the Buran family just over $1 million for nearly 80 acres of farmland in rural Dallas County. The land is east of Fifth Avenue and about 1 mile south of Highway 141. For the third time in 4 years, Business Publications Incorporated, which is the publisher of the Business Record, DSM and Iowa Magazines and their BPC customer division, has been named one of top 10 publishers to watch by Editor and Publisher Magazine. To be recognized multiple times is an unprecedented honor for the Business Record. And founder Connie Weimer and Suzanne DeBaca, the editor, want to thank their readers and sponsors for their continued support of the products and local journalism provided by the Business Record. To be recognized by EMP, the authoritative voice in news media since 1884, Business Record recently celebrated its 40th anniversary and the 40th anniversary of the Business Record and 20th anniversary of DSM Magazine. In 2020 and 2022, Business Record was recognized for innovation excellence during a time of disruption, including the pandemic and a volatile business climate. This year, the Business Record was BPC, Business Publications Corporation, was specifically noted for their ongoing digital transformation, product evolution, and 40-year legacy of strength and stability through a changing journalism environment. EAP cited the Business Record digital evolution, which is they've invested in provide readers with the news and information people want on the most convenient and efficient platforms. In particular, EMP noted that the redesigned and relaunched Business Record website, which offers improved design and functionality, enhanced digital newsletters, growth of both the Business Record and DSM websites traffic, increase in the social media channels, and a new customer relation management system. In addition, they have added team members with digital experience and expertise who are elevating the Business Record's digital presence and helping them reach new audiences and engage existing records. Business Record wants to thank group publisher Chris Konetsky and the entire Business Publications Corporation team. Under Chris's leadership, their team has upheld Connie Weimer's ongoing legacy and standards of excellence. Their executive leadership team is stellar, but to be recognized for continued excellence is a true testament to the entire amazing team at the Business Record. And finally, they want to thank readers and supporters of the Business Record. Local journalism continues to have a vital role in keeping the public informed on important issues. Business Publications Corporation is pleased to play their part in providing information opportunities for connection with their communities. And they invite people to continue to subscribe to their products and attend their events. And they thank readers and others for their ongoing support. And again, that's a column written by Susanna DeBaca, who's the president and CEO of Business Publications Corporation. A very nice honor for the Business Record. University of Northern Iowa has established the Arthur Cox Real Estate Champion Award. The University of Northern Iowa and its College of Business and Department of Finance has established the Arthur T. Cox Real Estate Champion Award that will recognize UNI alumni who have given back to the real estate program and helped to become a fixture in the industry. UNI, of course, is located in Cedar Falls as Iowa's only four-year real estate program. The award is named for Art Cox, the longtime director of the UNI Center for Real Estate Education. He worked at UNI for more than 25 years before retiring in 2021. Cox was known for his extensive connections in the real estate industry and with alumni strength he used to grow the program, according to a news release. Brett Olson, head of UNI's Department of Finance, said in a prepared statement, "It's not hard to see the influence that Cox has had on the real estate program. You go anywhere in the state and talk about UNI's real estate program, 90% of them say Art Cox. He He's one of those people who knows everyone and everyone knows him. This is a testament to what he's meant to the program and to real estate throughout the Midwest. The creation of the Arthur T. Cox Real Estate Champion Award will be commemorated at the upcoming UNI Real Estate Alumni Reception and Award presentation, and that will be hosted at the DMAC Urban Campus in Des Moines next Thursday. The inaugural recipient of this honor will be selected in 2025. And you are listening to this week's edition of the Business Record, the week of April 11th. Our thanks to the folks at Business Publications for providing a copy of the Business Record to IRIS so that we can read it for you. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, please give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now back to this edition of the Business Record. Delays in making new federal courthouse secure slows relocation of the district court. This is an article written by Kathy Bolton in the Business Record. The new federal courthouse in downtown Des Moines won't be fully occupied until late summer, several months later than planned, according to a court official who told the Business Record that the U.S. Marshals Services is behind schedule in making the building secure. The perimeter security is up and running, but the marshals are behind schedule on the install of some other interior things, and that's according to John Corder, the clerk of court at the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Iowa. The perimeter security, according to Corder, is up and running, but the marshals are behind schedule. The cell block is not fully functional yet, and we're still having to use hard copy keys rather than swipe cards. A few federal judicial divisions have relocated to a new courthouse, which is located at 101 Locust Street. Most, though, remain at the historic federal courthouse, which is on Walnut Street. A groundbreaking ceremony was held in August 2019 for the new federal courthouse that is replacing the 95-year-old structure. Originally, construction was expected to take 3 years to complete. The pandemic and supply chain disruptions delayed the project. A news release by the U.S. General Services Administration in July 2021 noted that the new courthouse was expected to open in early 2023. Information on the GSA's website now says that occupancy is expected in June 2024, but U.S. Chief District Judge Stephanie Rose recently informed courthouse employees the move to the new courthouse has been delayed by several months. Corder said that we are hopeful that the delay is only a couple months, but at this point, we're really waiting on the marshals to complete their work, according to Corder. A temporary certificate of occupancy has been issued for the facility. U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Iowa had occupied two buildings east of Des Moines River, the current courthouse and an annex at 110 East Court Avenue. The GSA has leased space in the annex, which is privately owned, and that lease recently expired, according to Corder. Several of the federal judicial divisions that have been located in the annex have been moved into the new courthouse. Among the divisions that are now in the new building are the Bankruptcy Court, Probation Services, and the Court Library. The District Court has cases that involve criminal defendants, many of whom are in custody, Corder said. We need to have a functional cell block. Hundreds of people are in the federal courthouse each week, nearly all of whom have some type of business with the U.S. District Court. Corder said that the U.S. Marshals can't handle the influx of defendants that are in custody as well as the amount of people that go through the court at this time. Rose has touted state-of-the-art technology and security provisions that are planned in the new courthouse. It has been difficult to update technology and security measures in the existing courthouse because of its age, she has said. The GSA announced in July 2017 that it planned on building the new courthouse on a two-acre parcel on the west bank of the Des Moines River between Grand Avenue and Locust Street. The site originally was home to the Des Moines Coliseum and later the Riverfront YMCA. Congress authorized $140.6 million for the project, which included the purchase of the site, design, construction, and other related expenses. The new courthouse includes 13 judges' chambers and 9 courtrooms with enough space for family members, victims, the public, and others to watch proceedings. The new courthouse includes underground parking, providing secure access for judges and others. The existing courthouse has 5 courtrooms, parking for judges on a nearby surface lot. Ryan Companies, the project's general contractor, has turned the building over to GSA, Corder said. And a story written by Michael Crum in the Business Record. Ankeny P&Z opens door to small data center project. It still needs city council approval, but the Ankeny Planning and Zoning Commission has taken action that would allow for the construction city's first data center. The commission voted on April 2nd to amend the planned unit development plan for more than 35 acres in the Crosswinds Business Park, and that's east of Interstate 35 and north of Interstate 80. The request was made by Snyder & Associates on behalf of an entity called Commerce Center, LLC. The amendment was also requested to include the construction of electrical substation on the site. According to the Secretary of State's website, the registered agent for Commerce Center, LLC, is David Hansen, the president of Signature Commercial Real Estate. Hansen said he could not discuss the project due to a confidentiality agreement. Derek Lord, Ankeny's Director of Economic Development, said that the area had originally included a plan for two large warehouse distribution centers. The property owner requested the amendment to allow for one large flex warehouse building and a small data center in the substation. The zoning that was approved would only allow a data center to be built. The next steps would be the site plan approval and a potential development agreement before any construction would begin. Lord said, "There's a lot of moving parts and pieces, and getting the zoning in place is one step in the process, but there's still a lot of work to do before we see any development on that site." He said that he does not know who the data center would be built for, but said it would be a smaller facility, unlike the other big data centers in the region operated by tech giants like Google, Microsoft, and Meta. "There are a couple of different models we have on our occupation," he said. "You take the big tech companies, but then there's, and you've already seen it in Des Moines Metro, where there's smaller data centers that lease space for other companies to place their servers to store data inside a centralized data center. It's a model that exists throughout the country, but because Central Iowa has so many of the big tech companies and mega data centers, that market is often overlooked. It will now go before the city council for a public hearing on April 15th, followed by the first reading by the council for approval on May 6th. And in another article by Michael Crum, Charlotte's Kitchen plans to open a drive-through restaurant in Altoona, a project that city officials say is another addition to the growing neighborhood that's quickly becoming the new city center of the Eastern Metro community. The Altoona Planning and Zoning Commission approved the site plan for the Chicken Eatery on March 26th, followed by the City Council's approval last week. When it's built, it would be the third metro location for the business that started as a food truck in 2020. According to Charlotte's Kitchen website, it also has locations in Johnston and Indianola, both of which offer sit-down options. City planner Natalie Jacobson said the drive-through only restaurant with some outdoor seating would be located at 109 8th Street Southeast. It would be the first that Charlotte's Kitchen will be building new. The other locations have been remodeled existing buildings. Jacobson said it's located just off First Avenue, which is one of the main streets through Altoona, in an area that is undergoing some commercial redevelopment. She said that right now most of our restaurant options are on the west side of town, closer to Adventureland and that entertainment area over there, so it's nice to see some restaurant and food options come in on the east side of town. Charlotte's Kitchen owner and founder Michael Hanstad said the concept in Altoona will be a throwback to the company's food truck days and close to residential areas so it can continue to be close to the customers it serves. Hanstad said that besides being closer to residential areas, the lack of other food options in the neighborhood was also a big consideration in choosing the Altoona spot. He said the biggest thing pulling us there was the lack of food options, but the amount of people that live out there, and that's honestly where we did most of our food trucks, was in those communities behind the school, out by the baseball fields that are close to that spot. Hanstad said that the size of the lot prevented it from being any larger than a drive-through operation, which will be around 960 square feet when complete. He's excited to construct a new building so it can be designed and equipped to operate as efficiently as possible. The Johnson location is in a former Dairy Queen, and the Indianola location is in a former convenience store. Both sites presented challenges for kitchen layouts and design. Hanstad said he's also excited for the Altoona site to open because it's important for the businesses to get involved in the community. He said, for us, it's important to get involved with the community and go somewhere where the community is needing something. When we met with the Planning and Zoning Commission, City Council, they both said the same thing, that the city really needed a food option down there. Plus, it's a good spot for us to just get really involved with Altoona. Hanstad said he expects the restaurant to begin serving customers in the next 5 to 6 months. It's not the end of plans to expand further, he said. He said that Sharda's Kitchen is eyeing sites in Waukee and Ankeny for future growth. Probably Waukee first if we can find a good, reasonable spot. According to Jacobson, people should expect to see some other projects in the area over the next couple years, but that it's too early to discuss what those projects might be. Jacobson said that this area of town has slowly redeveloped into more of our city center with how the city has grown. We've got some fun projects that we feel will be going on in that area, going to tie together, show off the history, but also create that city center downtown feel. Another article written by Michael Crum. The headline of this is New Unity Point Health Ierlei Ball Clinic is planned for Des Moines. Unity Point Ierlei Ball will open a new mental health clinic in Des Moines as it continues to increase access to mental health services in a centralized location. That's according to the organization's CEO, Cynthia Steidel Bishop. The 15,000-square-foot, two-story clinic is being built on the Iowa Lutheran Hospital campus, providing access to a greater continuum of care in one location. Ierlei Ball is currently housed in buildings at 945 19th Street and at 1301 Center Street. It will retain the Center Street facility for administrative and business functions. It will sell the 19th Street building, but there have been no conversations with prospective buyers, Steidel Bishop said. The cost of building the new clinic is estimated at $10.4 million. Ierlei Ball has received commitments of $4.4 million in grants from Polk County and the state of Iowa. A capital campaign of $1 million has raised about $300,000, and Ierlei Ball is continuing to seek grants and community support to fund the project, Steidel Bishop said. New clinic is expected to be completed by the end of 2024, with services beginning to be provided in early 2025. She said that the clinic will bring outpatient services under one roof, reducing confusion for clients and where they need to go. Community-based services will be located at the nearby Penn Avenue Medical Building. She said that it provides better access for people. There is such a need for more behavioral health services and access to services. Ierlei Ball will also be expanding children's services and substance abuse services as part of an effort by the state to expand 9 certified community behavioral health clinics in the state. Iowa has applied to the federal government to be a demonstration state to provide specific services. Steidel Bishop said that it raises the standards for what community mental providers need to provide. Ierlei Ball will also begin a medication-assisted substance abuse treatment program. She said that access to those kinds of programs have been limited, and she described the expansion of those services as exciting. The new clinic will also include a pharmacy, which Steidel Bishop said increases the likelihood that a client will fill a prescription. The clinic will also provide a place that will be more inviting and comfortable for people who are seeking treatment. Trauma-informed services were in mind when we designed that building, Steidel Bishop said. It's seating, it's lighting, it's how offices are designed. It's all for the clients that have been through trauma. The welcoming environment will also help relieve some anxiety people may feel when they seek mental health services, she said, and make them feel that they're important, that they get to be treated in a nice building. The new building will also help recruit practitioners, she said. It's difficult for a community-based service that serves the most vulnerable in the community to recruit because they, practitioners, are starting their own practices. So if we can provide a beautiful space for people and a beautiful place to work that provides the highest quality services, we're going to be able to attract more staff. Steidel Bishop concluded by saying, but it's the ability to increase service and access to them I was a catalyst behind the new clinic. This is exciting, not just for Ireland Ball, but for the whole community. Elsewhere in this April 11th edition of Business Record, InvestDSM expands its footprint in Des Moines. Three Des Moines neighborhoods, Union Park, north of Grand, and Woodland Heights, will join the InvestDSM as special investment districts in 2025, a move that will allow the neighborhoods to access revitalization grants. The Des Moines City Council last week approved a recommendation to adopt the districts. Amber Lynch, InvestDSM's executive director, said, "We are excited to expand our geographic footprint to serve more of Des Moines. InvestDSM, which was launched in mid-2019, is a joint effort between the City of Des Moines and Polk County to expand revitalization efforts in the city's neighborhoods. The program began in four neighborhoods, Columbus Park, Drake, Franklin, and Highland Park, Oak Park. Since the start of the program, more than 825 residential and commercial projects have been completed, according to InvestDSM. The projects include renovations and new construction. In addition, more than $24.5 million has been invested in the neighborhoods through grant programs, and $18.6 million in investments have been made by the private sector. Neighborhoods that are a part of InvestDSM can access resources for 10 years. Development of revitalization plans for the new special investment districts is expected to begin this spring, according to information provided to the council. Approval of the plans is expected to occur in spring 2025. Union Park Invest District, roughly between Arthur and Washington Avenues and Sailor Road, Pennsylvania Avenue, and East 14th Street, includes 885 parcels. 11% of the properties are rentals, city documents show. Just 7% of the area's properties are in good or excellent condition. 30% are in poor or very poor condition. The rest, 63%, are in average condition. The North of Grand and Woodland Heights Investment District is roughly between Interstate Highway 235 and Ingersoll Avenue and 42nd Street and Martin Luther King Jr. Parkway. The area includes 1,437 parcels. 10% of the parcels are vacant and 13% are rentals. City documents show that 24% of the area's residential properties are in good or excellent condition and 14% are in poor or very poor condition. The remaining 62% are in average condition. The United States Small Business Administration announced that Aaron Hewitt, owner of Des Moines Parent and president of Fem City Des Moines, as the 2024 Iowa SBA Woman in Business Champion of the Year. In addition to a role at Fem City, Hewitt launched the Des Moines Beyond Business Conference in 2022, is an author, and serves on the board of the Des Moines Children's Museum and the Grimes Chamber of Economic Development. The SBA Iowa District Office is honored to recognize Aaron Hewitt as an inspiration to professional women throughout Central Iowa, and that's according to Jane Armstrong, SBA District Director. And she added, thanks to her vision and hard work, women now have access to, necessary resources to start, build, and grow their businesses. She is truly making a significant difference in Iowa's small business community. Casey's has made a $100,000 donation to the new DMAC Transportation Institute, whose goal is to train a new generation of truck drivers. The donation by the Ankeny-based company is another milestone for the new DMAC training facility, which is slated for completion in 2025. The new facility is expected to double the student capacity of the CDL training program with a three-story garage and a new concrete pad. A federal judge has issued a temporary restraining order to halt deconstruction of the Greenwood Pond double site. Nicole Grundmeier of the Business Record wrote this article. The artist who 30 years ago created a walkable land and water art installation at the Des Moines Park has won a temporary reprieve from the work's planned removal. The Des Moines Arts Center may not proceed with the immediate deconstruction of Mary Miss Greenwood Pond double site after U.S. District Judge Stephen H. Locker issued a temporary restraining order late Monday this week following a 78-minute hearing earlier in the day. The Art Center, which took ownership of the artwork in the city's Greenwood Park after Miss completed it in the mid-1990s, has said that structural decay has made double sight an imminent public safety hazard and that it would be impossible to spend or raise enough money to refurbish it. But Locker's ruling focused on a passage in the initial contract between the parties that says that the Art Center agrees that it will not intentionally damage, alter, relocate, modify, or change the work without the prior written approval of the artist. Miss, who is based in New York, has not consented to the Art Center's assertion that double sight cannot be saved. She sued last week after months of correspondence to not produce an agreement. Locker said in his 12-page ruling that another hearing will be held in the next 2 weeks on whether to formally extend the order or allow the Art Center to proceed. Lawyers for the Art Center argued that removing the artwork was not the same as altering it, and that its agreement with the city of Des Moines allowed discretion for removal. Locker wrote that the Miss argument about the contract was more compelling, noting that there is no evidence in the record to suggest that the city required the demolition of the artwork. The Art Center also did not prove that the site's deterioration posed a safety hazard so severe that deconstruction had to begin right away, Locker wrote in his ruling, which also ordered Miss to post a $100 bond to protect the Art Center's interest if the restraining orders later found to have been wrongly imposed. "We will be pausing plans to remove the artwork from Greenwood Park," said the Arts Center in a statement on its website. "The sections declared dangerous and unsalvageable will remain enclosed in protective fencing." The Cultural Landscape Foundation of Washington, D.C., which has been working with Miss to advocate preserving the work, released a prepared statement attributed to Miss. It said, "I am pleased and relieved by Judge Locker's decision not only for what it has done for Greenwood Pond double site, but because it reaffirms the rights of all artists and the integrity of their legacies. Let's use this opportunity to reach an outcome of which we can all be proud." And our next story is entitled, "The Iowa Economic Development Authority awards $3.4 million in CAT sports tourism grants to 11 communities. The Iowa Economic Development Authority's Enhanced Iowa Board awarded $3 million in community attraction and tourism CAT grants to projects in 10 communities, and a $350,000 sports tourism grant to Newton Community Events Incorporated to promote the NASCAR race weekend at the Iowa Speedway in June. The Des Moines Community Playhouse in Des Moines was awarded a $400,000 CAT grant toward modernizing and expanding the Kate Goldman Children's Theater, including a building expansion, storage and workshop space, meeting room, new costume shop, and a configurable seating system to replace the existing fixed theater seating. The funding awarded to Newton Community Events will support marketing for the NASCAR Xfinity Series and the ARCA Menard Series races, including a multimedia campaign in Iowa and Omaha, a street team, promotional events, and small business activations. The Enhance Iowa program provides financial incentives to communities for the construction of recreational, cultural, education, or entertainment facilities to enhance the quality of life in Iowa. And other recipients of that funding include the City of Fort Dodge and Webster County Conservation Board. They were awarded $400,000 for the construction of park improvements, including construction of a multi-purpose pavilion with seating for 200 people, a skate park and shelter, green space, restrooms, swings, trails, and native planting. City of Atlantic was awarded $102,000 toward the construction of a 4,500-square-foot water-based aquatic venue. The City of Clear Lake and North Iowa Cultural Center Museum were awarded $400,000 toward the construction of the Surf District Music Enrichment and Immersive Center with a lobby, ticket office, gift shop, rooftop observation deck. Midwest Old Settlers and Threshers Association Mount Pleasant was awarded $210,000 toward the development of 100 additional camping sites and restoration of existing heritage electric railway. And the city of Kelowna was awarded $400,000 for construction of a splash pad, natural playscape, large and small dog parks, parking and restroom facilities with an attached dog watch station. Clayton County was awarded $220,000 toward a construction of a mile of paved trail to create the first segment of a two-mile loop trail connection. City of Carroll was awarded $203,000 for renovation of Merchants Park, including press box improvements and expansion. The City of Rock Valley was awarded $350,000 toward park improvements, including accessible playground. The City of Mount Air was awarded $340,000 toward the $3 million replacement existing pool with a 4,000 square foot outdoor pool with lap lanes, two diving boards, current pool, spray features, and a family slide. In our final story in this week's business record, Des Moines Area Community College has named Jennifer Woolison Executive Campus Dean of the DMAC Carroll Campus and Templeton Regional Center. She started a new role on April 1st. She has served in several leadership roles at the DMAC Carroll Campus since 2011, including counselor, advisor, and housing director. And you've been listening to the Business Record on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. I'm Pat Steele, and it's been my pleasure to read for you, and thank you for sharing your time this week with IRIS.